This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Parenting is a core part of housewives, and my new fave friend of is ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. ByHeart's mission is simple: make the best formula in the world while using the latest in breast milk science. ByHeart is the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed, whole milk, not skim. And ByHeart formula is clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit-up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code AndysGirls for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. While I live in New York City, and I love living here, regardless of how many times I complain about it, I do miss Rhode Island, especially because it's the home base for my fam. And sure, there have been moments where I've needed to call the Tobes ASAP, and I didn't know where she was. Family life is unpredictable, and a little peace of mind goes a long way. That's why I love Life 360. It's a great way of staying in touch with my fam back home. Not to say, shout out Tobes, that I'm going to stop calling as often, but it brings me comfort to know where they are. Something as simple as wanting to know if Tobes has left the house is so much easier with Life 360. It allows me to avoid making that extra text, "What's your ETA?" by knowing if she's actually left or if she does the thing that I often do of saying 5 more minutes when you mean 15. Those kinds of custom alerts, including locations, are made possible because of Life 360. You don't have to spend all of that extra time asking about ETAs, location. Are you en route? Have you actually left the house? Allowing me to spend more time on what's most important, ordering a glass of champs and asking my mom if she'd like me to order her an entree. Make everyday family life better. Coordinate activities in real time, keep tabs on your kids, connect with friends, and more. Life 360 allows people to stay connected without constantly bugging them. Custom alerts let you give your kids and loved ones the freedom they crave without compromising trust and communication. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code AndysGirls to get 1 month of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com, code AndysGirls. It's Andy's Girls. It's episode 5-something, whatever. I think 60, 561, 562, whatever. This is a timeless, evergreen episode after, honestly, a welcome Orange County premiere. So I just had to hop on the pod for just a second. So I thought when I watched the premiere, I would just be like raring to go, like full of energy. And I'm not saying I won't feel like that tomorrow, perhaps, but tonight, I just feel so relaxed. It felt right. It felt warm. It felt comforting. It was like a beautiful day at the spa, you know, some time with Emily in the sauna, minus the turkey sandwich, because, you know, I'm a vegetarian and gluten-free. I really watched that episode. I watched it this afternoon. The network had kindly sent me a screener like about a month ago, which I never watched because I wanted to watch season 15 first. I made that promise and I didn't want to dilute 15 or any conversations on the pod, you know, having any kind of like impact on opinions based on season 18. I just didn't want to know
I didn't want to know what happened. So I obviously finally got through Orange County season 15, thank goodness. And this afternoon, I watched the premiere of 18. Then tonight, I watched it again because I wanted to see it in its, you know, totally final form. And I also wanted to watch Shan on Watch What Happens. And I'm really glad I did. Because my sense of Shannon in the premiere was that she felt really fragile to me. And maybe that's just, you know, my opinion. I am a Shannon Bedore historian. Hashtag I stand for Shan. It's completely understandable how I could come to that opinion based on what she had experienced, gone through, and sort of the challenge she knew she was facing, just even based on the Johnny J. This man is so dumb. That's so stupid. The fact that Alexis wasn't joking when she said it, or maybe there was a part of her that was joking a little bit, but I don't think there was. I think she really was trying to rebrand this man because we all knew him as John Jansen. So now he can't be John Jansen anymore. His name has to change since I'm dating him instead of Shannon. So there was just a sense to me of a Shannon Bedore who obviously, as we've seen over and over again, she comes to the table with her feelings on full display each and every day. And she is someone who has gone through a lot. She is a woman who has been under crisis before, but certainly not in a legal situation involving a DUI. Now, I have seen her talk about this. I saw her talk about this tonight on Watch What Happens, on the show, in press, that she wakes up every day and she thinks about the DUI and the fact that, thank God, no one was seriously injured. That we saw, you know, the photo of her injury on the phone, which I was shocked by. I was like, holy shit. And Archie Bedore was in the car. Thank God he wasn't injured. So she has this, I'm sure, gratitude that no one was seriously hurt, and also just the guilt and shame of making a terrible, terrible decision. The thing that actually surprised me, now I genuinely do believe with every fiber of my soul that John Jansen's a piece of shit. And I am happy that I watched 15 and have obviously seen every other season, like probably 45 times, because it was helpful to see just more of John Jansen. It's not really quality versus quantity. It's just helpful to see how toxic their relationship was and how hard she was trying to pass off John as maybe a better man than he is. All that being said, I was genuinely surprised to hear that when the night of the DUI, when Shannon and John were having some sort of fight at John's house, he said to her something along the lines of like, "You're a drunken idiot. Don't get in your car." And then she got in the car, revved the engine, I guess attempting to spite him, and then got into the DUI. And it was just surprising to me that he actually said, because the bar for John is so low that I was like, they seem to be ignoring a lot in their former relationship, and also maybe with their relationships with alcohol or how that was used in their relationship. And so I didn't even think that he was going to acknowledge how bad an idea it was. So to hear that he actually said this is a bad idea, now, could he have potentially taken the keys out of her hands? Obviously, Shannon is ultimately responsible. I don't know how quickly that, you know, argument or him saying that, the difference in timing between that and her actually getting in the car and starting the car. I have no idea. But I was pleasantly surprised that this man at least said, you know, a DUI is bad, don't drink and drive. And then to hear that 10 days or whatever it was after the accident, he called her and said, "You ruined my life. You ruined my family's life because of the attention of the DUI," or his name, I guess, being spoken about so often publicly, was confusing to me, especially because there were photos of them together following the DUI. And Also, I thought that they were hanging out at some point, or maybe that was just happening prior to the DUI, but after they had originally broken up. But he certainly was some sort of support system for her following the DUI. There are photos of them together. So I don't entirely understand what happened. If he made that call to her 10 days after the DUI, he saw her in the interim there. So I don't really know what set this off. And also, to say that she ruined his life because she's a public figure, and I guess he was named in articles or blog posts or Instagrams, to me, that cannot be connected only to the DUI. That has to be connected to his time on the show. But that then ties into the question, I think, on many people's minds, which is like, what the fuck are you doing now? He gives red carpet interview. Like, what is he even doing being interviewed by anyone? He releases exclusive statements to press outlets in the hopes that they'll be published. He's obviously publicly dating this woman and riding the coattails of whatever that is. So I don't entirely understand him being this private figure that we've been led to believe he was, and also being, I get that he wouldn't want to be associated with a DUI in general, or being associated with someone who committed a DUI. I get that, but it just doesn't connect with everything else, including his behavior after that. But also, how could it? I mean, it's trying to, Alexis is doing a really real, she's attempting to do a really difficult job, which is to come in guns blazing and say, this man is the best and everything associated with him is Shannon's fault. I mean, the way that she communicated at that dinner with Heather and Emily, when she said, Shannon's a drunk, don't believe her. There are so many different ways that she could have gone about this introduction. Gina gets into it better than anyone else at Heather Dubrow's party when she says, like, this is actually ridiculous that John has put both of these women in a situation where they feel like there's some sort of fucking duel where they're fighting each other about this man. Like, his dick can't be that big or that good to require this kind of, I don't know, aftermath or this kind of situation. It's like this triangulation that's really just confusing over him, over Johnny J, which I keep thinking Johnny Rockets when Alexis calls him Johnny J. But now I feel like I have to call him Johnny J because the John Jansen we used to call, that to me, like, say whatever you want about him, but like the name John Jansen, when I think of John Jansen and Shannon, obviously it's very complicated, very dark relationship, but I just think of the way she said it. She would usually have like a little humor in her voice when she said John Jansen, John Jansen. So now I'm like, yeah, maybe he is Johnny J. Maybe this is just this odd, comical, oblivious, but also obvious persona of pretending this man is cool or literally anything greater than what he is, which is just a relatively small man with, I guess, a big dick. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it. Alexis could have gone about this in so many different ways, but maybe, I don't know. Obviously, she feels this way. I think there is a certain amount of bravado also attached. I don't know, you know, from everything that we have heard from her and other people, production was already in conversation with her before she and John had any idea who each other was through this, like, one night at the Quiet Woman, November, whatever, whatever. So I just kind of think to myself, like, could she not have come in here with some sort of element of like LOL grace? But then I think, first off, what is Johnny J saying to her about how everything that's ever been said to him is and about him is entirely Shannon's fault? None of it's real. He's a quiet guy. He hates the press. Let's go to an Oscars party tonight. It none of it really connects. And I felt like she was going so hard on the offense of trying to convince everyone that the reality of Johnny J's and Shannon's relationship not only, I guess, wasn't real, but was really bad. And if it was really bad, it was all about Shan. And the perfect example about that is that months after they broke up, She, at his house, got into a DUI. None of that connects. Her saying to Emily at that dinner that Emily's opinion of Johnny J. I can't call him that. Sorry. Emily's opinion of John Jansen doesn't count because it was coming from a woman who four and a half years after starting to embark on a relationship with this man was arrested after making a terrible decision. Everybody is on the same page. Getting a DUI is a terrible decision. She is so fucking lucky that she did not hurt anyone or herself. We saw the photo of the injuries again, but like, she's fucking fortunate for that. It was a do not drink and drive was a terrible decision. But to say this woman's opinion doesn't count because of that night, to discount their relationship, I don't know. It just makes me look worse at John because I just think, what has he told her and how does that invalidate everything that we've seen? Does that mean that none of our opinions about John should be believed because someone else got arrested for a DUI? It doesn't make sense. And I really appreciate it. I assume that she's going to walk this back, but I really appreciated Emily in a confessional being like, yeah, he's a piece of shit. He's a douchebag. Like, she's not afraid to say it. It's the easiest thing to say. And I think it does Alexis a disservice. I think there are many of us who are excited for her to come back. I'm very excited she's there. It's going to be a great season. But it just makes me sad that her persona and identity is so wrapped up in John, and that being wrapped up in John means she needs to be so, so angry at Chan. Because I just think, no, you're, you know, you got divorced from Jim. I guess they're co-parenting or co-suing, like, very well. They're doing a great job together, I guess, or whatever. It just feels like Alexis, there's so much more about Alexis that I think is interesting, so much more interesting than this man she's stooping, who we already know a truly sloppy seconds. I hope it was just the first episode. I hope that we get to know her on something more than this, like, relatively superficial level, because I think she's enough on her own. So why come armed to the table, you know, guns blazing in this way? Like, she says, you know, I won. I got the man. I'm so glad he dumped you or whatever else. Well, then be happy with him. Why are you so upset to be so fortunate with this man while convincing everyone that he's the one? Okay. You know, best wishes, best of luck. I would kind of think, you know, not the way you get them is the way you lose them, but like, look at how toxic his relationship with Shannon either became or always was. How is that not ringing a couple alarm bells? But obviously for Alexis, alarm bells don't exist. And if you hear one, it's been installed incorrectly by Shannon Bedore. Like, that feels like her reasoning for everything. And I also wonder, so I don't remember this whole thing about a cease and desist. So I need a little bit of a remembrance. I need to remember a little bit more what the details were with the lawsuit. I remember that Tamra and Shannon, was there another guest? Tamra and Shannon went on a podcast, were talking shit about Jim Bellino, and then he sued them for defamation. They're not legally allowed to say about anything about a settlement, but it cost Shannon Bedore about $300K in lawyer's fees and Tamra $500K in legal bills. So that was a pretty significant fuck up in whatever they said on the podcast, and also just shows the level of vengeance that Jim had about how to seek revenge. So is there a question of whether or not Alexis knew? I mean, it reminds me a little bit, honestly, about what we saw happen with Ashley Darby, Michael Darby, and Candace on Potomac, where Candace was upset at Ashley because of Michael Darby threatening her with a lawsuit for defamation, or attempting to file a lawsuit for defamation, which felt like a really punitive measure. He was using his money to try to seek revenge about, like, being humiliated or embarrassed on TV. Please, that's a long list. And Candace was upset about Ashley. Ashley's response was like, I have no control over this person. I believe Ashley more in that situation than I do Alexis with Jim. But I also think the follow-up question is, did you have a conversation with this man and say, this is, like, too much, this is inappropriate? And maybe, P.S., my job is at risk as a result. You cannot be suing my coworkers and cast members and have that and not have that be an issue? Or do you really just genuinely not give a fuck about me and you're incredibly selfish and self-centered, which is probably connected to the reality here? With Alexis and Jim, I mean, at that point, Ashley and Michael were estranged, and, you know, they're going through something related to a divorce. With Alexis and Jim, it's a different conversation because there's a cease and desist. So did Alexis send a cease and desist to Shannon and Tamara telling them to shut the fuck up, and then Jim followed up with a lawsuit? Because the way Alexis was responding to it was like, that was so 3 years ago, let's move on. She did also say, you know, if you think I sent that letter, dig it up. I hope Shannon does. I would assume that she shared it with someone. So if she doesn't have the original copy, there has to be some sort of screenshot of it, email to a lawyer, maybe for advice or something else. I don't think it like does not exist. I think it's important to see it. But I also thought Alexis's responses were really curious because she didn't seem entirely bewildered at the idea that she was being like blamed for some of this or was an active participant. And I personally, this is not because I hashtag stand for Shan, although maybe it is. I just genuinely, as a viewer in that moment, I was like, oh yeah, she had something to do with this. And maybe she was also embarrassed by what was said on the podcast and was like, you know, you can't do this to him and or us. I don't know what inspired it, but do I think she had some role here? Yes. And I do think it's interesting that Tamara immediately is like, well, she told me she wasn't involved, so I believe her. I would assume that Tamara would be aware of this cease and desist. Is it possible that the cease and desist exists and Shannon forgot who sent it, or was Alexis named in it in any way? I assume we'll find out. Alexis did say, you know, in all of the court documents, I'm not named. Sure. I bet that's true. She may well not have been named, but did she have a role in this? Did she encourage it? I would not be surprised if she did. If Tamara finds out that information, I think she would have to weigh that against how mad she wants to be at Shan, whether or not she would acknowledge that, like, oh, okay, maybe this wasn't as cut and dry as I wanted it to be in order to become fast friends with this person who used to be my foe. I thought it was fascinating. That last scene, this is why, again, I feel like I just got a massage, because the cast leaning up against the window, Emily like literally scrunching up her face, looking for like a little nook so that she can see more about what was happening, was wonderful television. Tamara turning to Katie, who I'm very curious about. We saw essentially nothing about her first episode, nor did I expect anything first episode, but I'm sure like second or third, we're going to really get into more. But Tamara turning to Katie and being like, extending her hand and being like, nice to meet you. This is sort of mortifying, but you know, welcome to our world. Fabulous. Also, that party was weird, but I do think, you know, Heather approaches events. I mean, it was beautiful, definitely beautiful, but she does approach events a little bit like a series of arts and crafts of you get to do this and this and this and this. And I don't know if it's because she likes a regimented schedule. She likes a theme. She likes to have people do things aside from, you know, eating and drinking and having the festive schmooze. So the fact that there were a lot of, you know, maybe that was just her being generous for us. Maybe she was thinking, what would the viewer like? Let's give them a bunch of options so there are different places in which women can start to scream at each other. And I really appreciated that.
After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. When Aunt Flo comes to town, I just want to move out. I feel like I'm going to crawl out of my skin. My cravings go wild, and I just don't feel quite like myself. Now, it's easier to manage PMS with estro control. And for those going through menopause or perimenopause, when it can be a struggle to find comfort in your body, you have to try Hormone Harmony. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life, or our natural feeling after watching this current season of Real Housewives of New Jersey. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But it is perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. From hot flashes and night sweats to poor sleep and feeling tired all of the time, Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. Did you know that you can't see a wrinkle? What we're really seeing is the shadow inside the wrinkle. Top Beverly Hills plastic surgeon Dr. Leakey has helped countless celebrities achieve flawless complexions both on and off screen. He says the secret is to eliminate the shadow. And there are two ways you can do that. Fill in the crease itself and reflect light away from the shadow. Fortunately, he's found a way anyone can do just that to achieve a flawless red carpet look right from home. It's called Deep Wrinkle Filler. Deep Wrinkle Filler combines a unique blend of skin-like polymers and light-reflecting diamond dust to visibly fill in the look of fine lines and wrinkles. Best of all, this groundbreaking formula helps nourish the skin to improve its natural texture every time you use it. Now, AGs know I am spiritually mid-20s plus, but I was curious about trying the Deep Wrinkle Filler, and I loved it. I'm one of those people, my beauty regimen is very, very simple. First off, I'm gorgeous, number one, most important. But also, when I wake up and before I go to sleep at night, I'm pretty straightforward with cleansers, moisturizer, and oftentimes I don't really wear makeup during the day, unless I feel like Chris Manzo is nearby. I loved using the Deep Wrinkle Filler, and also I gifted one to Tobes as well, who's really enjoying it. It's super easy to use, the applicator is super straightforward, and it fit into an already pretty seamless regimen. Go to beverlyhillsmd.com/andysgirls to get up to 68% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want to visibly fill in stubborn wrinkles, go to beverlyhillsmd.com/andysgirls today. I really did. I thought that the episode, it's not that it was mellow. There was a lot going on, but it just felt organic. It felt like there was a really great flow. And there was also a lot that I didn't know. And there is to me nothing better than watching a premiere episode of a season and not knowing everything about it. I mean, I think New Jersey can be really guilty of that. Beverly Hills can be really guilty of that. There was just something about, obviously, we know about the DUI. We knew about Alexis joining the show as a friend of. We know things were going to be tough at some point,
or every point between Shannon and Alexis, but I didn't know about Jen and her eviction and whatever's going on in the dynamics with her ex and Ryan, oh, God forbid. And I certainly didn't know about Gina. I mean, there were little descriptions of the cast members, you know, that the network always puts out in advance. I usually, when they put out the trailer, they'll like put out the individual cast member, like glossy photos and a little description of what they're going through that upcoming season. So I do remember that the Gina description involves something to do with Travis, but I certainly didn't know all of the details and all of the nitty gritty. I thought the way that they had, you know, continued conversation about Gina leaving the house was really interesting. It looks like it was incredibly painful for both of them. The fact that she had an understanding that she was outgrowing the house and didn't know if she was also outgrowing Travis was really interesting to me. Like she says, I want to do this, but I, you know, if I do this, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose him. Versus, if I don't do this, I'm afraid I'm going to lose myself, which is the little PS that I'm adding at the end of that sentence. Like, that to me is really interesting. She felt an urge to either become more independent or create a little bit of space. And also that has the benefit of giving her kids more space, her kids more independent. You know, we've seen the house, like cute little house, but small house, small, but not depressing. We've already litigated that from 15, just a small space. So the fact that she can afford to do this and give her kids potentially more structure, more room, you know, I think it's incredible to see Gina's growth. It obviously was really painful for her and honestly for me to see Travis's sadness. You know, she's asking him if he's mad. He might be mad. He's definitely upset. He's obviously sad. And her reasons for it, connecting it with whatever difficulty Travis is experiencing attempting to get divorced, is interesting to me because Travis has always been, for, you know, for everything that we know about him, like an incredibly stable support for Gina. She's gone through a lot. She has needed that support. He has been certainly a partner to her, but also a friend. She's gone through a lot with Matt, legal issues, emotional challenges, still processing the betrayal of being cheated on, all of that. He's been a strength for her. And it's not that she owes him herself or her soul, but it just sounds like an incredibly sad situation between Travis and his ex. I don't know the details of it. I wonder if we'll find out more. I honestly kind of hope that we do. I like definitely hope that we do, because it would be helpful to have an understanding of exactly the reasons why Gina felt like, I need to put a little bit of a pause in this. Is it because things are just so hot that she felt like maybe a little bit of distance would allow Travis to focus on litigating the divorce and hopefully finalizing it? Or is this just kind of like a black hole where there's no real chance to catch your breath because whatever is going on between him and his X is just so overwhelming and endless? I mean, you hear about that, of people ending divorces and having these incredibly toxic breakups because someone wants to seek revenge, someone feels like their voice isn't being heard, someone isn't okay letting go, or they weren't potentially in control about the breakup and feel like this is a way of asserting control by being maybe, you know, a little bit tough. Like, I would be curious to hear more there. I wonder how much of Travis's voice we're going to get. You know, in watching the Watch What Happens, Shannon seemed to me really fragile during the premiere, definitely felt stronger, more solid, more grounded during Watch What Happens, which I was really happy to see. She said during Watch What Happens that Travis and Gina are like stronger than ever, really, really happy, which I was happy to hear. It was just really sad to watch them kind of go through this. We saw glimpses in the trailer of everything else this season. She, you know, mentions during some sort of tennis match argument, when she's like throwing her racket or whatever the fuck, she's like walking off the court, that, you know, Travis is mad at her, so why not have everyone else? And So I'm curious how that's going to develop. And also, like, genuinely, like, what is going on with the ex? And God forbid the ex finds out that Gina left and feels like, well, I guess I'm winning more. I don't know what you do in that situation. I don't know what kind of support Travis needs and where he is now. Like, I would not want to be in the situation that he's in and potentially feel abandoned by my partner, but also she has the right to make these decisions and say, I need to be independent and I don't want to get caught up in this. Like, if the ship is going down, I don't know how to describe that. I feel like that's insensitive for me to say, but it just feels like she needs to put on her life preserver first. Like, it's the whole, you know, God forbid you're in a plane situation, you have to put on your oxygen mask before helping someone else. You need to be able to breathe. So I don't know how that connects with continuing to be a support for him. Maybe she just needed space and she's allowed to have it. They're still dating. It's not that she says, I'm breaking up with you because of what you're going through. But what she is saying is, this is overwhelming. And I need to make sure that my kids are okay, that I'm okay. And I don't think it's just the ex, but I think that's a huge part of this. I do also think she needs more space. And if she can provide that for herself and for her kids, God bless. And also, connected with Gina and houses, what the fuck is going on with Jen and her eviction? I was not ready for her to say, you know, we had to move in a week or whatever because someone sold our house. So I contacted Gina. She got us a rental and we essentially defaulted on that and are being evicted. And I have to say that I love Jen Pedranti, love her to bits, and very concerned about the choices that she's making, being so close with Ryan, but like quite literally being engaged to Ryan, not feeling great about how that's going to turn out. But I also kind of feel like, ma'am, you're contributing X amount of dollars to your rental. Your ex is contributing the vast amount. It sounds like she sort of woke up one day and found out that they were, is the phrase arrears? Like that they were really, really late, past due on their rent and either facing eviction at that point or being evicted. And she's not reading the emails. Like, why is it that I feel like Gina knows more about her eviction than Jen does? First off, as Gina said, it's honestly a really shitty position to put your friend in. That's not Jen's first priority. Her first priority is making sure she has a house over her head. But if you are coming to someone to ask for help, I do think that there's like basic responsibility that you should feel in reading emails. Doesn't mean she's going to come out with money out of her ass, but also this first house is being sold. You're getting evicted. You need a rental. What's the conversation with Will like? Because it feels like this sort of happened really quickly. So did he just stop paying the rent the second you moved in? When did his financial situation end? When did he stop working for your family? Why is he so late in sending financial documents to lawyers? That doesn't make me feel like he wants to close up shop on this marriage anytime soon. Is he trying to hide something, or is he just like struggling and he has a shitty attorney or something else? It's not great for them financially that he's no longer working for her family, but that might be the best for her family, meaning her immediate family, and also the situation with, you know, the actual company itself. That might be a good idea. They are no longer married. This doesn't sound like it's going terribly well. So maybe he should find another place to work. But also, what's his financial like prognosis? What's the financial state of affairs? Did she have a conversation with him when she said, okay, our house is the house we were living in that we were renting is being sold. We need to move somewhere else. What can we afford? Or did she make this, you know, rental agreement and then he was just supposed to pay the money? Or did she say, we have to get a rental, whatever, it's going to be X dollars a month? And he was like, sounds great, which is entirely possible. And then everything just kind of went to shit. I don't know the order of events, but it's very concerning that he does not seem to be paying anything. I don't know if that's because he can't afford it. I don't know if that's some sort of version of vengeance or something else. Again, these divorces get really complicated, especially when money is involved. But it is very concerning to me that Jen is potentially living above her means. I mean, I don't understand what her means are. She owns, I think, that yoga studio. She's saying she gets paid $50 a class. Her father is helping her with her legal bills. Ryan has helped her with her rent, but she still couldn't get caught up because next month was due. This does not feel like a great pattern. And now she's in a situation where, I don't know, is she going to move in with Ryan? I'm not sure. Obviously, they've gotten engaged. I'm very concerned about this woman becoming dependent on this man. She can marry him, God bless, but how dependent financially is she on him? How dependent was she before he proposed? He doesn't sound like he's in a potentially great financial situation right now. If, you know, $16 million or whatever just got accidentally Venmoed to him and he, you know, thought, oh my God, I just pressed accept. You know, he won a lottery ticket, except there was no ticket there. There was maybe fraud. It's not feeling great that, and also if you get married and how liability works and whatever else, I'm not feeling great about Jen's future with Ryan, but I also have questions about her present. And then there's the extra expectation here when you join these shows that you are going to be living a certain kind of lifestyle. And I just wonder how much of the keeping up with the Joneses on TV impacts some of her decisions here versus just keeping up with the Joneses IRL. I don't know. It makes me very nervous for Jen. And I hope that one of the lessons that she's learned is like, I need to stay on. Don't be Teresa Giudice. Don't be, Kyle said she does this too. A lot of people do. Don't be the person that doesn't read the contracts, the legal documents, especially because she is not yet the wife. She is the fiance, was the girlfriend. She needs to be more aware. I think Jen needs to take more responsibility, not just for figuring out ways to provide for her family and, God forbid, like living in a different kind of space if she can't afford it. Like, I know, Gina's talking about, you know, my kids need more space. I'm going to provide it for them. She didn't do that immediately. She lived into a space that she and Travis could afford. And so with Jen, I just don't want her to go from a position where she was taken care of by her husband and then taken care of by her family, who also took care of her, I think, before her husband, and now is being taken care of by Ryan. I just don't want her to be in a situation where she's dependent on this person, especially if there might turn out to be a reason where she needs to leave and maybe needs to leave quickly. It does not make me feel great about what the forecast looks like for her and Ryan and just with Jen and herself. And I hope she called Gina and said, I'm sorry that you're in this position. I mean, that does genuinely suck that Gina's in the early days of being a real estate agent. Obviously, her reputation is going to be affected if she arranged for this rental and then the tenant is being evicted because of months, I guess, of not paying rent. That does impact a person's reputation, especially if you don't have a huge history or track record with arranging housing and selling houses, because she's still in early days. Like, that made me annoyed on Gina's behalf that she was put in that position, obviously not intentionally by Jen. I'm not getting the sense here that this woman is like taking out crazy loans or potentially being served eviction notices on camera because of living like sky high behind her means. I do think she's being honest about what's going on, but I just want her to be more aware. And hopefully she's apologized to Gina. I just think like a friendly, you know, like, I'm so sorry that this happened and I really appreciate you helping me with this and helping me with this so quickly. And I'm so sorry that it didn't work out. Whatever kind of language, maybe she's already done it. I wasn't sure, but I really like Jen Pedranti and I'm nervous that she's going to lose some of what could be really important independence that she could have gained from the divorce. It feels like, you know, they had this emotional affair that she says wasn't physical, and she went immediately from her marriage to Will. I just forgot his name. I think it's Will. From her marriage to Will, straight into this seemingly committed relationship with Ryan, someone who has never been faithful until he met and fell in love with Jen, which does not make me feel great about their dynamic, but we will figure it out. Also, in the trailer, like the end of episode trailer with the, you know, Tamara shouting at Ryan, referencing the FBI, when was that scene filmed? Is there going to be a little bit of a whisper toward the end of the season that all might not be great with Ryan, and there are rumors that he was implicated in some sort of situation involving a bajillionaire baseball player and that person's, I don't even remember, accountant? I knew the details and then absolutely got blocked out of my mind to have more room available for Shan. Is that going to be like a part of the conversation in the quote unquote friend circle that something's going on with Ryan? Like, when was that filmed, or was it filmed when cameras got picked back up after, you know, Ryan either got a home run or struck out, depending on if you're a Bravo viewer or Ryan himself? That to me was an interesting moment. What can we say about Tamara? So glad she's back. I was not expecting to see Sophia. And obviously Tamara's there last season, but I'm just saying, it's great to see her. It's great to see Heather Dubrow. There's just something about it where I'm like watching Orange County and I just feel like I'm home. Like, this is great. We needed some light. We needed some new content. New Jersey as New Jersey does. There's something about Orange County right now where I'm like, we deserve this. This is right. For the 100th season of Housewives, it feels not like an accounting error with Peggy S. This feels right, that it would be this season of any franchise, let alone Orange County, which would make the 100th season of a Housewives franchise to air. So that I'm really into. Was surprised to see Sophia, although she turned 18. And as we saw with Spencer previously, the second these kids are turning 18, they're signing an agreement to film. I do wonder what conversation they had about things that Tamara is going to discuss on camera. She got emotional a couple times. She referenced Simon, which made Sophia obviously uncomfortable, and also Sydney. And when Tamara was crying, talking about Sydney, and Sophia's just kind of looking at her like, I don't want to do this in front of cameras, I just wonder to myself, I mean, Tamara knows her kid. I just wonder, is there an explicit conversation of like, okay, you're going to film, it's going to be your first time filming as an adult, you haven't done this in a while, I am going to bring up stuff that's going to make you uncomfortable because that's part of my job? Or is that just understood? Or is it not understood at all? And Sophia didn't expect that her mom was going to bring up her, I guess, estranged father, or maybe not estranged. I'm not quite sure what's going on with their relationship. And Sydney, who I guess is estranged from also from the siblings in addition to her mom. That, if I knew that before, I had forgotten, because I was surprised to hear it. And I'm sure Sophia, as we saw, because she literally told us, was not thrilled with discussing that on camera. I just kind of wonder for Tamara. I mean, this is the thing of like, you have the right to tell us what's going on in your family, but what was the conversation like with Sophia? Why did we have to do that with Sophia? Why couldn't we do that in a confessional or with Eddie? Why did it need to be with the kid who was uncomfortable? Or is part of the discomfort just, there's no great way for me to say this, like the cost of doing the job, that you wanted to have this moment, not necessarily connecting with your child, because they're obviously connecting, but like talking about the dysfunction in the family, and that's just what's going to happen. I just kind of wonder from Sophia's perspective how aware of that she was. I don't know. I genuinely am not sure. And also, Tamara's anger with Shannon is intense. I get what Tamara is saying, that she and Shannon had a falling out at some point following the arrest, following the DUI, because they were still going on tour. She's saying that Shannon is sneaking alcohol, that Tamara lost respect. But then also Tamara has said previously on Jeff Lewis Live and Shirley on 2T's that the reason she stopped going on the tour was because she had other commitments with 2T's in a Pod, that 2T's in a Pod was also going on tour and she would have possible date conflicts with doing a tour with Teddy, LOL, versus continuing with Vicky and Shannon. It's not to say it can't be both. And I do believe Tamara when she's like, the show was so focused on alcohol, it made me uncomfortable. I believe her in saying that, but I also don't think that was the only reason. And she's very focused, seemingly, on trying to make jokes or drag Shannon for being a quote-unquote drunk in a way that does not, to me, look great for Tamara. I don't understand. I guess it's because Tamara feels like Vicky and Shannon pick things up so quickly, or maybe she feels like they've made her the butt of the joke. I don't know where all of this anger comes from, but is it because Shannon got a DUI and Tamara feels like she's been affected by that? You know, they said during these like press opportunities, including at BravoCon, Shannon talks about what a great support Tamara was. So when did that turn? Like, when did it come from, I want to support my friend who just got arrested and really, really needs friends around her and also doesn't have her boyfriend anymore and is in this like really difficult time in a really dark space versus I hate her now? I don't totally get a reaction to someone either drinking alcohol or sneaking alcohol being met with so much loaded anger and bitterness about it. I get if you feel like your job is in jeopardy or you don't want to see your friend making decisions that could negatively influence their life, or if you genuinely feel like she was sneaking this thing and feeling frustrated that she was presenting something else or feeling like she was making light of it and you were attached to that. There's just something about cruelty with Tamara where it feels like she expects us to understand that she had felt empathy for this person, but she switches so quickly into like dark, shitty, again, cruel, quote unquote, jokes. I don't really get how we got from 0 to 100 here. I feel like the expectation is that we understand it, but I really don't. Like, when did the empathy end and the cruelty begin?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I have a couple self-care non-negotiables. There are things I need to do every day. They may seem simple, but they go a long way. For me, it's movement, getting out of the apartment and going for a walk, which can be difficult when temps are super hot. And it's easy to let those priorities slip. But when you feel like you don't have enough time to stay centered, non-negotiables like therapy are more important than ever before. AGs know how important therapy has been in my life. I'm really open about it because it's important to talk about the things that make us feel better and the fact that there are tools available. I was nervous about starting therapy, about what it would mean to open up, and I cannot tell you how much that thinking has changed as a result of making that first step. I know that there is a safe space where I can go share exactly how I'm feeling and get positive, productive feedback. I feel stronger than I ever have before, and it's because of therapy. For everything life brings, big and small, therapy has helped me navigate. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/AndysGirls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/AndysGirls. One of my favorite people in the entire world is Fabio, who I also call Fabi and Fobs. He's really my New York City uncle, the super of my building. We've known each other for about 87 years since I moved in. And there's a lot to love about Fabi. One of my favorite things about him is that he's such a family man. And on the weekends, holds these amazing, vibrant, fun cookouts. And since he is my personal hero, I knew exactly what to give Fabio, aka Fabi, aka Fobs. Hero Bread. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Since Fabi loves to use the grill, I knew that Hero Bread's new Hawaiian rolls would be perfect. And Fabio agreed. They're light, delicious, and while the rolls are great for fun summer sliders, Hero Bread works year-round. Healthier sliced bread and tortillas, which fit easily into health goals. Fabio does a lot of physical work here in the building, and he has a big family. And also, I will never allow him to retire. Hero Breads works great for those big family events or if you just want to pick up summer snack. Hero Breads has something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. Ever feel like you're too busy watching a beloved Bravo marathon to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution, like spicy chicken tinga tacos with black beans and pico de gallo, which I got to make and enjoy this week. I was able to swap in a vegan substitute for the chicken and had one of those dishes I will remember. Unlike Padmalakshmi, I am not a top chef. Sunbasket is so easy. It comes with super easy to follow directions. And if I can do it and love doing it in the people's kitchen, so can you. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home. Try it for 4 weeks and see how your clean eating can change the way you feel. And Sunbasket can fit my lifestyle and many more, including Mediterranean, carb conscious, vegetarian, keto-friendly, gluten-free, diabetes-friendly, and more. And as I did, it's super easy to customize recipes to meet your exact needs. I don't feel constricted by looking at vegan or vegetarian only. Sunbasket makes it possible to eat your best your way. You can swap red meat for chicken or turkey, or like me, swap in a vegan protein. Plus, Sunbasket offers pre-made meals, delicious single-serving meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes, which is just around a commercial break from RHOC. There's something for every health journey, mine included, and every busy lifestyle. It's easy to use Sunbasket to achieve your kind of healthy. Go to sunbasket.com/Andy's Girls today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/Andy's Girls to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order.
And also, Shannon talked about this on Watch What Happens, certainly going to be a hot topic through the rest of the season as it was during the premiere. She went to some wellness, I'm not making light of it, but I don't know exactly what it, like a wellness center or retreat. She obviously was in court mandated alcohol school, I think is what she called it. She's also doing community service, also has 3 years of probation. There's a lot on her legally. And then in addition to that, she decided to go to this center or space or something, and also be seen by a psychiatrist and someone who's focused on trauma. She talked on Watch What Happens about the fact that alcohol for her was a form of coping. She did it a lot. She did it too much, and she's had a wake-up call. So it sounds like she obviously wants to change her relationship with alcohol. I just, as an outsider, wish that if she is feeling like she's in control now with her relationship with alcohol, that this is, I think, the first time that she's going to have two drinks at an event versus many. I wonder for her if she's really cognizant of, she's saying she used it, but like cognizant of the number of times she would call people after turtle timing from a space of despair, not remember those conversations. You know, she's saying instead of drinking, I'm working on, you know, breathing exercises, I'm working on walking, I'm working on exercise. All of those are healthy, important ways to cope. I'm happy to see it. I don't know if it's selfish. It's certainly not my job to assign to someone how they should react with their relationship with alcohol. That's, I have a different opinion on that than everyone else in the cast who's like mandating what Shannon should do. I wish that she had made the decision, again, this is selfish, to maybe like put a full pause on alcohol, maybe while taking the 9-month alcohol class, maybe while working on the breathing. And then, you know, if she wants to have alcohol continue being a part of her life, make that decision after a period of time of really, really putting it aside. Her explanation is essentially, I am in control of this. I am aware. I was in a really, really unhealthy pattern. I also wonder, like, how aware? For men, because we saw this for many, many years that she was using alcohol to cope. This isn't a John Jansen beginning issue. This is a, I would assume, pre-David Bedore or certainly mid-David Bedore issue, because we didn't see them at the beginning of their marriage. We saw them at the tail end of it. And so it might be selfish of me to wish that, like, oh, I wish that there had been the possibility to, or that she had decided, made the choice to kind of put this on the side a little bit. And her response to that is like, I need to be honest. I'm not going to cover up anything. She has a conflicting memory of the, you know, trying to sneak alcohol version of events than Tamara does. I do think this might be the, you know, there's your truth, my truth, and the goddamn truth. I think there's probably something in the middle here, a third option of what happened. But she's saying, I'm not going to lie about the fact that I am still going to drink, but I am in control of it. And I hope she is. But obviously, the decision to have a cocktail here and there is going to influence the storyline of everyone else in the cast. If you decide to continue drinking, which she is, that's her. She gets to choose how to identify her relationship with alcohol. She gets to choose potentially what hitting bottom looks like or rock bottom looks like. She gets to make those decisions. But also, if you continue to drink, even if it's a glass of Prosecco a week, or I'm just thinking Prosecco because I'm a Shams gal, like whatever it is, vodka with soda is probably more Shans vibe. If you decide to do that, or tequila, obviously, from, you know, season 15, if you decide to do that, have the understanding that these women who probably would be having this conversation anyway, because people are going to have this conversation when they hear about someone who has been arrested for DUI, who they know, who they film with, who also they've understood her relationship with them, especially when it's been influenced by alcohol, that they are going to talk about that all season. So if you are comfortable, I mean, maybe that's unfair of me to say, are you comfortable with these women using the fact that you were still drinking to say that this is evidence of a relationship with alcohol, which might continue to be unhealthy? She has the right. I said she has the right 35 times. Vote in November. She has the right to decide how she wants to proceed and act in her life. I just think when you are filming this TV show, you know that this just happened. You're processing a lot, especially if the psychiatrist is new, if the trauma therapy is new. I don't know. She's saying that she, you know, is making the decision that's right for her. And I'm glad to see her telling us that she's going to be honest about all of it. And it sounds like her priority is being honest to herself. I just also think about the mechanics of reality TV. And is this giving the women a potential weapon here to use? I mean, Tamara's gonna call you a piece of shit regardless and gonna shame you because maybe she feels like she has the right to, and also she's mad. Do you want to give her something else in the arsenal? Is it worth it? And Shannon's reaction might be, it is, because I want to be honest about what I want to do in my life, and I'm not responsible for what other people say about me. She might make that call. Sounds like she did, because she told us she did multiple times. And also, Shannon and Vicky are performing here in New York City next week. Saw that went up on social yesterday. Absolutely audibly screamed. I have not gotten my ticket yet. I need to, especially because Andy was hyping it during Watch What Happens, which makes me feel I don't even want to look, you know, tonight to see if it's available, which is counterproductive if I do, in fact, want to get a ticket. I really feel like I need to be there for that. I really feel like, and that's going to be probably an emergency AG classic. Who are we kidding? Feels important for Shannon and my continued relationship that she doesn't know about, that we're best friends, all that good stuff. There was a lot there. There was a lot to say about the premiere episode, which is why I really feel so overwhelmingly optimistic about what this season is going to cover. And it's not just about Shannon, but I do think she's in a difficult dynamic right now, because the argument that Alexis is attempting is like, let it go, move on. Shannon obviously can't do that when Alexis is on the show bringing Johnny J. Jansen with her. That is a very tough position to be in. And if I was Shannon, I'd probably be feeling a certain way about the fact that this decision was made. Obviously, as said, the conversation happened prior to Alexis and John dating, but certainly that helped her get this friend of role, or at least was particularly interesting and engaging, I would say, for production, who may have already decided that this would be a good fit. And also, what's going on with Katie and Heather? So I guess there's some sort of back and forth. Heather has said in real time doing press that she feels like Katie came to the show with maybe a vendetta or plan to like have a moment. I would assume that Katie's argument, not knowing anything about Katie, is like, no, I'm upset at you for lying about X. Is this going to be like a nothing burger thing where like you lied about what time we should have met for coffee and now we hate each other? Or is this going to be a larger deal here? It sounds like it became a big deal. The result was a big deal, but I wonder how small of a lie, or alleged lie, I wonder how small that act may have been, if it was about something completely innocuous, or maybe in a Housewives classic moment, it's something along the lines of like, you were talking shit. No, I wasn't. You're lying. That is a trope that has been used effectively many times before, including on Orange County. And I just have to say, listen, I know there's been a lot of shit said about Gina and Emily. A lot of it, certainly in early days, I think a lot of it deserved, but they have grown into such strong housewives. I love seeing Emily on screen. I really genuinely do. I think she's funny. She's smart. Her confessionals are pretty strong. I'm hopeful that she's not going to back away from some of this stuff when it comes to John. And Gina, we're watching this woman really come into her own and figure out some really, really challenging events in her life, her relationship with Travis, what's going to happen there, how they're going to make this work, and then how do you move forward? So is he going to stay in this house that they've been sharing? She lives somewhere else with the kids. Like, at what point do you potentially decide we want to live with each other again? Or maybe that's just not something that they need to figure out now. Maybe it's just, we're going through a lot of stuff in your life, in my life, let's just give us a chance to kind of get through this and breathe, and then we'll figure it out. It's genuinely fascinating. Lord knows there's going to be more to discuss. And so thank God that there's some more AG classics on the cal with some of my favorite guests so that we can unpack all things Orange County. Because I'm so curious to hear other folks' thoughts. I just think overwhelmingly people were, you know, team premiere seemed like two thumbs up. Way to have a 100th season kickoff. I do recommend the Watch What Happens with Shannon if you haven't seen it. And also, my friend and editor at the Daily Beast, Kevin Fallon, had a really deep interview with Shannon. You can read that by going to beastobsessed.com or just Googling like Kevin Fallon Shannon or Shannon interview Daily Beast. And it came out today, the day of the premiere, and it's a really interesting interview. Shannon goes into more detail about sort of how she's feeling, relationships in her life, and certainly alcohol. Her relationship with alcohol was definitely a part of the interview. So I recommend reading it. It's a really, really great interview. And shout out to Kevin for his job on that. And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode. Listen, speaking of listening and listening to this episode, do you want to listen to some Patreon episodes? You could do that right now. Sign up for the AG Patreon. It's the number one way to support the pod at patreon.com/andyscrolls. Send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone. You can DM them to me over Instagram. Please include your first name in town, even if you've sent satchels galore in the past, and I will hopefully unpack them. You may hear them on an upcoming Patreon Satchel Spectacular. So again, include your first name in town. Let me know your thoughts. If you're feeling some things about New Jersey, have some thoughts on the Orange County premiere, something else that's happening in the Bravo universe, or something else entirely, I would love to read it and take up space. Do not apologize for sending paragraphs or a dossier or whatever else it is. As you know from Andy's Girls, why use one word when you can use 40? And also, I think, you know, we all understand the value and fun of talking about housewives and having hopefully nuanced, meaningful conversations with a poop joke now and then. So I love to read your thoughts. And so if you want to send some details, more power to you. And I love, love, love them. So again, you can DM them to me over Instagram at Dame Galley. And if you have a thesis with chapters, which I love to read as well, you can email andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. And thanks so much for listening to this episode. Happy Orange County premiere. Happy 100th season. Doesn't look a day over 10. I hope you enjoyed the episode of Orange County as I did. And if you didn't, let me know why, because I'd love to unpack it. All right, guys, have a great night. Happy Orange County premiere week. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.